Generation Gunned Down is a special report from WUFT News that looks at the aftermath of school shootings from Columbine to Marjory Stoneman Douglas.
I want a safe environment for teachers and students. What good's an education if your kids don't come home at the end of the day?
WUFT takes a look at 20 years of gun violence since the Columbine High School shooting and how America has responded to it. We spoke to survivors of gun violence and activists who say never again. This project looks at changes that have been made and asks what solutions, if any, exist to prevent the next tragedy.
Simplest, easiest place to start is to, you know, let teachers who are already carrying or are willing to carry guns, let them carry.
But no suggested solution is safe from debate.
I will never be armed. If that's the route this chooses to go, then I will stop teaching.
Over the next hour, the Generation Gunned Down team will bring you the stories of the people who were there and those trying to make a change.
Jefferson County 911.
Yes, I am a teacher at Columbine High School. There is a student here with a gun. He has shot out a window. I believe one student
On April 20th, 1999, a pair of students opened fire at their high school in Littleton, Colorado. In the immediate aftermath and media blitz, the nation looked for answers, trying to find out how a tragedy like this could happen. The outpouring of information spawned several debates that included gun control and other discussions like high school bullying and violence in video games. Regardless of the alleged cause, it seemed clear at that time that something this horrible could never happen again. But it did.
What a lot of people in the nation are thinking about right now, the aftermath of the horrible shootings on the Virginia Tech campus. He was asking for prayers, asking for healing for everyone involved. And
again?
911, what's the location of your emergency?
Sandy Hook Elementary School, 12 Dickinson Drive.
Okay, I've got that. What's going on down there?
I believe there's shooting at the front glass. Something's
okay.
Going on.
All right, I've got all, I want you.
And again.
Shooting up Marjory Stoneman Douglas.
Someone is doing what?
Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School is being shot up.
Are you at the school?
Gun violence in schools is not a new phenomenon. The first reported school shooting in America was in 1840 at the University of Virginia Law School. Since 1999, there have been four school shootings with more than 10 victims, three of which were deadlier than Columbine. For 18-year-olds just entering college, this epidemic is all they know. The tragedy at Columbine happened before they were born, and they've grown up in a society that says it's sick of the violence but tolerates the things that allow it to happen. It's affected their development, their attitudes, and their beliefs. I'm Sky LeBron, and this is Generation Gunned Down.
People ask, how do you get through something like this? How do you deal with the pain of losing a child?
Tom Mauser's son, Daniel, was killed alongside nine others in the library at Columbine during the shooting. He was 15 years old. Daniel was a Boy Scout and a straight-A student who liked to play video games.
What I most admired about Daniel was that he took on his weaknesses. He was not at all athletic, but he joined the cross-country team at Columbine. He was extremely shy. Last kid you'd expect to get in front of other kids and speak, and yet he chose to join the debate team at Columbine, and he was one of the best debaters they had.
20 years later, Mauser vividly recalls the grief, the helplessness that followed his son's death.
I also remember that terrible feeling after burying Daniel, and the friends and family went back home, and you suddenly had this empty feeling of, oh my God, I just don't know how we got through it all.
In the play, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot, there is an often quoted line, no parent should have to bury a child. Unfortunately, it's an experience many parents in America have gone through. Prior to Columbine, it wasn't normal to send kids to school and worry they wouldn't come back alive.
You know, I never would think it would have happened to me.
Andrew Pollock lost his 18-year-old daughter, Meadow, in last year's school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. In Meadow, Pollock not only saw a reflection of himself, but a tough, beautiful, confident woman headed toward a career in law.
Meadow was a fighter. She's got two older brothers. And she was most like myself, Meadow. She fought at the end on the third floor. She covered one of the students.
As far as Pollock is concerned, Meadow's death was a preventable tragedy. Law enforcement failed her, school policies and local politicians failed her. Pollock even feels in some way that he failed his daughter.
I got to live with that. I sent my daughter to school with this animal, and I didn't know about it.
Pollock maintains friendships with some fellow parents of the MSD victims, but has spent the past year cutting ties to South Florida. He says there's nothing left for him in the place where his daughter died. He's moved out of his Coral Springs home and is staying in an RV parked outside the Coral Springs Chabad, where he attends synagogue. His goal is to dismantle the political system he believes caused Meadow's death, then leave the county for good.
So once it ends, I really completed my mission, what I had to do, and I could get the hell out of Broward, which I'm looking to do.
Pollock's wounds are still fresh, as is the grief shared by families who have lost loved ones in recent shootings. If there's any solace, it's that Mauser once found himself in the same place.
The biggest thing that gets me through it is simply saying, and what would Daniel want? What would Daniel want? Would he want me to be in such deep grief that I can't get through a day? That I can't be part of the family, or that I just can't survive? No, no. He would want me to find a way to get through this.
Mauser still lives with his wife in Littleton, Colorado, where their son was killed. The couple focused on raising their daughter, Daniel's little sister, Christine. And a year after Daniel's death, they decided they still had enough love for two kids.
We thought, okay, the time that we would have given to Daniel, we'll give it to another child. So that certainly played a role in, and perhaps distracted us a bit from our grief, pouring our time and our love into another child we brought into our lives, this baby girl from China.
The Mausers let their daughter, Christine, name her new little sister, and she decided on Madeline. Currently in college, Madeline embodies a lot of the traits Mauser says he saw in Daniel. She's shy and aggressively smart with a passion for math and science. Mauser's not over the death of his son, but he's past the grief.
That doesn't mean I don't cry for him. Doesn't mean that I don't miss him. But he would want me to go on with my life and all of us, our lives. And I think he would appreciate us making proud of him. And that's what I've tried to do and devote myself to that.
In the aftermath of gun violence on school grounds, it's not just the grief of the victims' families that gets left behind. The trauma the survivors experienced sticks with them forever.
It's just something that's, you know, even to this day, you can't even comprehend that it's real, but it is.
English teacher Dara Haas was grading entries for the literary fair at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on Valentine's Day 2018. She remembers the happiness and excitement in the room for Valentine's Day, as some students already had gifts and balloons from others.
We heard the boom, 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 and everyone immediately, you know, the room was like, what's going on? And I thought it was a drill, and I kept saying, yeah, it's so realistic. I'm shaking. It's so realistic. And I said, it's just a drill, and I turned around, and that's when I saw my student.
Eight students were shot in Haas's room as the killer took aim through her classroom door. When police arrived to evacuate the survivors, Haas was holding her students close, refusing to leave.
It's silly now. I kept saying, you know, I can't just leave them. I'm the teacher, I'm the last one out. I have to have all my students out, and three were not coming out.
The tragedy's effect on her psyche was immediate.
My husband said that I cried in my sleep all the time, and I would wake up hysterical. Certain gestures or noises or things will trigger just a memory or something, and we're all different.
In the 2 decades since the Columbine shooting, medical knowledge of trauma and how to deal with it has grown, and the number of students and teachers who have had the same experience as Haas has grown as well. No one would have wished for this, but the fact that someone has been there before has been a comfort for survivors of recent shootings who have been able to deal with trauma better thanks to their predecessors.
I learned to ground myself and kind of stay in the moment and not get lost. You know, it's something that will always always be in my mind. And like I said, it'll haunt me. It'll always be there. I spoke with Paula Reed, who was a teacher at Columbine. And so she said, it's always going to be with you, and it's always going to be kind of part of you, but it doesn't have to hinder you from living the best life.
Reed, who retired from Columbine in May of last year, makes it her mission to help survivors of school shootings.
So it was just a, you know, kind of a way to say to them what I would have said to myself.
She's been to Marjory Stoneman Douglas twice, once after the shooting and again before the first anniversary of the attack. Reed tells students and teachers what to expect, what the healing process is like, and most importantly, that they're never going to be the same, but they're going to be okay. By talking to these new survivors through their trauma, Reed hopes they can avoid the hardships she faced after Columbine. Her marriage struggled, she felt like she didn't have any energy for her kids, and she began to contemplate suicide.
So the first 3 years were the hardest by a long shot. And so it was that third full year that I started breaking out, and hives in my hair started falling out and all of that stuff. And I took 2 years off. And it was in those 2 years off that I kind of got my feet back under me.
1 year after Parkland, Haas says she's regained her footing. She bakes cinnamon rolls while her two young daughters play and watch cartoons. She still loves teaching and loves teaching at Marjory Stoneman Douglas. She credits a lot of her recovery to the therapy she received after the shooting. It's something Reed thinks is essential for anyone who has gone through that kind of trauma.
I tell all those teachers, the sooner you get therapy, probably the better. And if a therapist doesn't work for you right away, get a different one.
Still, despite the progress made when it comes to understanding trauma, care isn't perfect. No matter the attention paid to survivors and families post-tragedy, some things get missed. In 2000, a year after watching one of his fellow students get shot, Columbine student Greg Barnes died by suicide. In the last week of March, in separate incidents, two survivors of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas shooting died in apparent suicides. One was still a student at the high school, while the other, 19-year-old Sydney Aiello, had been attending Florida Atlantic University at the time of her death. She had been friends with shooting victim Meadow Pollock. Aiello was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and struggled with survivor's guilt. While she had received some counseling, she's one of hundreds of former MSD students who no longer have access to the services of the Broward County school system. Hundreds more who have lived through the attack are set to graduate this year. To afford mental health care, they'll have to turn to their family, their community, or turn out their own pockets to get the help they need. In Colorado, churches and other religious institutions stepped in. Larry Renault is the lead pastor at the Waterstone Community Church in Littleton. Around 40 Columbine students were members of his youth group at the time of the shooting. After the tragedy, the church became one of the many informal trauma centers set up in the town, with dozens of counselors and specialists being bussed in to speak to anyone in need of assistance.
We were in shock. I think the community was in shock. No one ever thought this would happen in Littleton.
The congregation at Waterstone funded the mental health coverage for survivors whose families were church members.
I think of the 40 kids, and I tracked this for a while, I would say over, it seems to me I want to say 35, 37, took advantage of counseling early on. It was a very high number.
In many cases, survivors of traumatic events don't actively seek out mental services. Allies and survivors from Columbine and Marjory Stoneman Douglas are advocating for the importance of mental health resources so that no more lives are claimed after the fact when school shootings occur. At the state and federal level, there has been no legislation to support these kinds of services. Up next, the activists that rise up after school shootings. Who they are, the methods they use, and why, despite the shared goal of school safety, they have very different ideas on the road to get there. You're listening to Generation Gun Down, a special project from WUFT News. Many activists have taken up the cause of ending school shootings. Their survivors, friends and relatives of the victims, students and teachers, or just concerned citizens. From Columbine to Parkland, on the left and the right, these activists are pushing for different policies, but they have the same goal: a world where students don't have to show up to class and worry about being gunned down.
Dad, did you know there were loopholes in the Brady Bill?
That's the question Tom Mauser says his son Daniel asked him over dinner one day.
2 weeks later, he was killed with a gun that was purchased through a loophole in the Brady Bill.
That loophole, otherwise known as the gun show loophole, permitted buyers to purchase from unlicensed gun dealers and not have to wait the required 5-day period. Just 10 days after the shooting, the National Rifle Association had its convention in Denver. Tom joined a massive protest hastily organized against the lobbying group. He had no solid plans, only a sign and 400 copies of a flyer he made. When he got there, he learned he was the only relative of a Columbine victim in attendance at the rally.
So then I said, well then, I guess I'm going to have to speak. And that's what really, that's what got me started. I spoke to a crowd of 10,000 people 10 days after my son was killed.
That's how Mauser got his start in activism.
I kind of knew once I spoke that indeed there would be that kind of reaction, that I was putting myself out there, and I was willing to live with the consequences.
The summer following the Columbine shooting, Tom became a lobbyist for Safe Colorado, an organization formed to advocate for gun control legislation. John Head is one of the lawyers who spearheaded this organization. Safe Colorado's first goal was to close the gun control loophole Daniel had told his father about.
We couldn't even make it out of committee because the Republicans controlled it and they didn't want anything to do with gun control.
Through a petition, Safe Colorado turned the measure into a voter initiative, leaving it up to a statewide popular vote. It passed with 70% in favor.
That's the only measure that Safe Colorado advanced. And then from that time forward, every year there would be some attempt by the legislature to gut one piece or another of Amendment 22. And every year I'd have to go up to the legislature and defend it.
In the 2 decades since Columbine, Colorado has swung back and forth on gun control, usually depending on partisan control of the legislature and the governor's office.
We failed miserably in 2003, but I mean, it wasn't anything that we could have helped fail at.
Eileen McCarron is a gun control lobbyist with Colorado Ceasefire. She's been working to enact gun control legislation in the state since 1999.
So in 2003, when the Republicans reoccupied all the levers of power in the state, they put through a strong pro-gun rights agenda, particularly a concealed carry bill.
The pendulum swung back to the side of gun control advocates after the shooting in Parkland last year. Not only moving voters on the fence about gun control legislation, it inspired a whole new generation of activists.
I'm the state coordinator for March for Our Lives Colorado.
I'm also on the board for March for Our Lives Colorado.
Rachel Hill and Kaylee Tyner are current students at Columbine High School. They have grown up in what was essentially ground zero for the modern age of school gun violence. For Hill, that meant they had to get involved, especially when she saw what was going on at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas through social media.
So after Parkland, seeing that kids like us could go through the same things, it motivated us because we feared the same things that they feared before that day. And we go through lockdowns every year, and every year we're reminded of the country we live in. So it pushed us to work harder because it was so much more real for us after that.
The duo first got started with the national walkout staged by high school students after the shooting. They then got involved with organizations like Jefferson County Students Demand Action, Every Town for Gun Safety, and Students Demand Action Colorado before their current work with March for Our Lives. For the past few months, Hill and Tyner have been lobbying for a measure that would approve extreme risk protection orders, a type of red flag law that allows family members or law enforcement to petition a court to remove guns from a dangerous individual.
Like, our main focus is the ERPO law here in Colorado. And last year it didn't get passed, but because of the movement in the country and then a lot of the students' work in Colorado for the past year, definitely, like, it's a huge reason why it's more than likely going to be passed. Cross our fingers.
On April 12th, Colorado Governor Jared Polis signed House Bill 191177 to establish the Extreme Risk Protection Order into law. The bill, first introduced in the legislature in 2016 by Colorado Ceasefire and other gun lobbying groups, was finally able to push through this year thanks to youth activists and Democratic gains in the 2018 midterm elections. If Colorado's gun control legislation was hard to approve, similar measures at the federal level have been nearly impossible to pass. In 1994, Donna Shalala was part of the team that pushed the assault weapons ban during President Bill Clinton's administration.
Well, we tried to do it forever, but we only could do it for 10 years, and it was part of the crime bill. And so it was a bipartisan effort at the time. We were helped by the fact that there were more Republicans at the time that were willing to talk about banning assault weapons.
Shalala is currently a U.S. Congresswoman. Her district includes over half the city of Miami. Since her work in 1994, the U.S. has not passed any major gun control legislation, and even the provision Shalala worked on during the Clinton years expired in 2004. It was not renewed. While gun control and school safety measures enjoy success on a state-by-state basis, some proponents have lost all hope on passing federal regulations. But a younger and louder wave of activists bursting onto the scene hopes they'll be the generation to change that.
No more silence and gun violence! No more silence and gun violence!
For activists on the right side of the political divide, these efforts are misguided. School safety is their priority too. They've also lost loved ones, kids, colleagues, classmates to school shootings. The only difference is they don't think guns are the problem.
And I want to see the kids safer and the teachers. I want a safe environment for teachers and students in the whole state.
Andrew Pollack blames a lot of things for the death of his daughter Meadow and last year's school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, but the gun used is not one of them.
No one went into school. The killer could have had a knife, a hatchet, a musket, and he could have killed 17 people.
The Parkland School Safety Commission, launched after the shooting, found systemic failures in school safety and countywide policies that allowed the Parkland shooter to legally purchase the rifle used in the shooting. Leniency policies for juvenile defenders meant he never had a record to be flagged during a background check. Security guards left gates open against school policy, allowing the shooter to enter campus, and personnel who saw him and thought he was suspicious never confronted him or called in a code red alert until it was too late.
And that's why I'm out there fighting to get rid of these things, these policies in Broward. So, you know, kids and parents, they don't have to go through something like I did. So the parents out there need to wake up and get involved with locally.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis appointed Pollack and his son Hunter to his advisory committee on school safety. DeSantis has echoed Pollack's criticisms of the Broward County School District and even removed Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel from his post for his handling of the shooting and the events leading up to it. For now, Pollack and his son advocate for school safety. That means metal detectors, bulletproof glass and doors, ID checkpoints, and beefed up school security, including armed teachers.
But for us in the state of Florida, the Marjory Stoneman Douglas event was our epiphany. It was our 9/11. It was our Pearl Harbor.
That's Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd, a member of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas Commission on School Safety. He considers himself Pollack's ally in the fight to buffer schools against potential shootings and doesn't think it's possible without arming teachers.
There is a shortage of law enforcement officers across the state and nation. We couldn't come up with them even if they had the money, and they didn't have the money. When seconds count, minutes don't matter.
Judd has lobbied in support of the Coach Aaron Feist Guardian program, named after one of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas faculty members who shielded students before being killed. When then-Florida Governor Rick Scott signed the Guardian program into law, it only allowed school personnel whose main job is outside classrooms, like a coach or security guard, to carry guns. An expansion of the program to allow teachers to carry a concealed weapon was postponed before its scheduled vote earlier this month. While Republican school safety measures advance as Democratic bills die, Florida student activists are still passionate about gun control. March for Our Lives activists like Emma Gonzalez and David Hogg crisscrossed the country to drive up support for gun reform. Their lesser-known counterparts are doing the same back home in Parkland. Alyssa Fletcher is one of them. Currently a senior at MSD, Fletcher was one of the main organizers for the Parkland March for Our Lives.
All together, all of our efforts together, like we put on this huge march to show what we stand for, that we won't let gun violence affect us.
While hundreds of thousands gathered in D.C., the rally where the cause began in Parkland saw over 10,000 supporters march from a local park to the site of the shooting. The rally beforehand took a heavy stance in favor of gun control and against the NRA.
If our current legislative officials will not work towards gun safety measures that we, their people, support, then we will elect new representatives who will.
This gun control sentiment was shared among most students and teachers from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who have become activists since the shooting. Sarah Lerner is a journalism teacher in her fifth year at MSD. She's recently released a book, Parkland Speaks, compiling the artistic works of the survivors.
If you do not support gun reform, if you don't support teachers and safety, then we're done with you.
No matter where they stand, these activists, spurred by a common tragedy, have committed to the cause. From Andrew Pollack.
So we're in a battle now to get rid of those policies and create a safer environment for the kids and the teachers, too.
To Sarah Lerner.
But I will work the rest of my life to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again.
To Alyssa Fletcher.
I promised that I would never give up the fight, and I'm making sure I'm sticking to that promise.
But for Tom Mauser, it's been decades of the same struggle with no end in sight.
That was 20 years ago. And here we are today, and it's still happening.
Young or old, left or right, pro-gun or anti-gun, friends, family, and concerned citizens are looking for a way to cope with the loss of a generation's innocence and find a way to stop the carnage. After the break, what changes have taken place nationally and at the state and local level to address school shootings? What's worked and what hasn't? Next, you're listening to Generation Gun Down.
Code red! Code red!
After February 14th, 2018, nothing has been the same for students in South Florida.
Lights!
This is their new reality. Month after month, students are required to participate in Code Red drills, one of the many things taking place across the country after the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. The necessity to be prepared affects every grade level.
You know where we go for the Code Red? We go in the bathroom.
Riley Haas is a five-year-old kindergartner.
There's like 18 of us. So, and it is like this small, and our group is like this big. And so we always go smush together, because, and then we have to go near the toilet, and we just can't all fit in there.
Riley's mother, Dara Haas, is an English teacher at MSD and a survivor of the Parkland shooting. For the 2018-2019 school year, Broward County has adopted the practice of designating hard corners in classrooms. These are spots where students and teachers can hide outside the line of sight of an attacker prowling the hallway. Haas made sure all her students were familiar with hard corners.
I went with the policeman to make sure the safe areas in my class. I told my students where it is. So that kind of gives me that little bit of, okay, safety, we have a little plan.
Lori Oladev lost her 14-year-old daughter, Alyssa, in the Parkland shooting. She thinks if the hard corners policy had already been in place, it's possible Alyssa could have survived the attack. Oladev successfully ran for a seat on the Broward County School Board with a platform of improving school safety. Beyond hard corners, there's a lot more changes she'd like to see.
So there's different things, from having single point entry to having more cameras, to wearing ID badges. Students could have bulletproof backpacks, because at the end of the day, if all else fails, they would have their bulletproof backpack to protect their vital organs. And there's other solutions too, like metal detectors, metal detector wands, dogs that can sniff out drugs or guns. I think it's important to randomly have these checks in schools.
Some of these measures have already been implemented.
So in our school alone, and I know in a lot of the local schools throughout Broward County, a lot of the students are now forced to wear ID badges before we walk into school.
Alyssa Fletcher is a senior at MSD. She supports increased security, but worries that not all public schools in Florida can afford to make the same changes. For private schools like American Heritage, funding hasn't been a problem. The Plantation campus is less than a 20-minute drive from Parkland. Elise Blum is the principal of American Heritage. She knew after the shooting there had to be some changes.
So ever since Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, we have four armed people on campus at all times. Two of our security officers, who are former police officers, were trained specifically to have a gun on campus.
After learning authorities were unable to locate the shooter during the MSD attack due to the unreliable and faulty surveillance system, American Heritage decided to upgrade its own cameras.
We have an extensive camera system all across campus, and then we have this incredible camera room, which has bulletproof glass, and there's always security staff in there.
Through constant drills and surveillance, Blum hopes American Heritage has made it impossible for an active shooter to be successful on its campus.
We're able to identify where something is happening, and then using the camera system and our walkie-talkies get our armed people to that spot within 30 seconds. So imagine how many fewer people would have lost their lives at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas if somebody with a gun had been in that hallway in 30 seconds and had taken down that shooter. So that's our goal.
These changes cost American Heritage about $500,000. To make comparable upgrades to all other public schools in the area, Broward County would have to spend more than $150 million. The Jefferson County School System, which includes Columbine High School, says they've been working toward improving security for 20 years. For John McDonald, the executive director of the school's District Department of School Safety, they should have started even sooner.
People think Columbine was the first, right? Paducah, Kentucky, Jonesboro, Arkansas, Pearl, Mississippi all happened within a year and a half prior to Columbine. In 1982, we lost our first student to a school shooting. So we still weren't prepared. We didn't do lockdown drills that failed at Columbine.
After the 1999 massacre, local security officials took measures to prepare for another potential shooting. The Frank DeAngelis Center for Community Safety is a facility in nearby Wheat Ridge where law enforcement trains for active shooter situations. McDonald says the center works to improve law enforcement response time.
You remember who you're fighting for. Remember who you're training for. It's not only your life, you're training for 86,000 kids in our community, in our school district, 860,000 in our state.
In 2018, the center trained over 6,500 members of law enforcement. They've trained agents of the FBI, ATF, the U.S. Marshals Service, and more. The training changes with the times as well. New training rooms will fill up with smoke during a session. Smells of gunfire and blood spray in the area. Noise machines simulate gunshot sounds, sirens, and children screaming. The idea is to make it as lifelike as possible to prepare for a real scenario. McDonald says he gets frustrated with other school districts that think a school shooting can't happen in their area, especially in 2019.
That's unacceptable. We all own school safety, all means all. I have little tolerance for those that think that we're different, that we don't have to practice. And that's the failure when we look at high casualty counts around the country.
While schools can update their policies on a local level, lawmakers have typically lagged behind with legislation. Colorado State Representative Patrick Neville was a sophomore at Columbine when the shooting took place. He would like to see more guns in schools, including in the hands of willing teachers.
So I think when we actually advertise that our schools are gun-free zones, we actually invite this kind of atrocities to happen, because these crazed lunatics, they look for the easy target.
Since taking office in 2014, Neville has repeatedly brought legislation to arm teachers to the Colorado House floor. It's been rejected every time. He continues to push it with the hope that mindsets will change.
But for me, it comes down to there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And I think this is the right thing that would actually protect our kids in our schools. And I think if had something like that been in place in 1999, more of my friends would be with me now. So I'm not going to stop and back down.
Since the Parkland shooting, many state lawmakers have made school safety a priority. In Florida, the Republican-led legislature has passed a mix of gun-friendly and gun control laws in response to the shooting at MSD. They raised the age to buy an AR-15 in the state from 21 to 18, but also voted to allow certain school faculty to carry firearms as part of the Aaron Feist Guardian program, named after the MSD faculty member who died shielding students from gunfire. And just this past Wednesday, the Florida State Senate advanced an amendment that would allow trained teachers to also carry concealed firearms in the classroom.
I think we all got this, is a pencil from a retired teacher, and it says, "Pencils for Peace." I get it that they want peace, but that pencil is not going to stop a gunman that comes into our schools. The only thing we have for our teachers when they're in harm's way is to fire back.
The chamber is voting on the new proposal April 23rd. In the past year, both Florida and Colorado have passed some form of red flag law. These laws allow family members and law enforcement to petition a court to remove guns from an individual they consider dangerous. Extreme Risk Protection Orders, also known as ERPOs, have been authorized by red flag laws in 15 states and Washington, D.C. No red flag laws existed before 1999. Nine were passed in 2018 alone. Beyond the hard fact of safety measures and legislation, people have changed as well. Following the shootings at Columbine and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, there was an outpouring of support as the local communities rallied around the schools.
We are MSD! We are family!
Much like the MSD Strong slogan created after last February's tragedy, the Littleton community had its own mantra. We are Columbine. People felt obligated to make sure their fellow neighbor was okay, and it started with the students.
Our staff at Columbine, we had 145 staff members who really made a commitment to stay until the class of 2002 graduated.
Frank DeAngelis was Columbine High School's principal at the time of the shooting. For him, the commitment was personal.
We just didn't rebuild this community where it needs to be. So then I went on and I made some promises to some people. I said that I'm going to stay until every kid who was in the elementary school graduated.
DeAngelis kept his promise, leaving his role as principal in 2014, 35 years after he started at the school and 15 years after the tragic shooting. For the past 20 years, the community attached to the tragedy at Columbine has unofficially led the discussion on school safety and gun violence. Craig Scott, a former student at Columbine whose sister Rachel was the first person killed, says that's all changed now. Two decades has been long enough to fade from the limelight.
This is a big anniversary for our community because it's probably the last anniversary where it's really going to be recognized by, like, I would say, like, the world and the news media.
With the March for Our Lives, many who've held the banner of school safety for years due to their experience in Columbine feel the torch has now passed to the Parkland activists. They hope the reality 20 years after Parkland looks far different than the reality they see now, 20 years after Columbine. Just ahead on Generation Gun Down, what's been proposed, have any changes been effective, and where those who have taken a stake in school safety fall on often partisan issues. A look at solutions next. For 20 years, school shootings have been an issue of intense national discussion. Everyone agrees there's a problem, but not everyone agrees that there is a solution, at least not on the same solution. For some, the root of the problem could lie with the very document that this country is founded on.
We need to reassess what the language of the Constitution means, parting the Second Amendment.
Alec Chow, a South Florida student vocal on gun control, isn't an isolated case. Young millennials and members of Generation Z have an increasingly unfavorable opinion of gun rights organizations, claiming they're pushing a misinterpretation of the Second Amendment with disastrous consequences. Pastor Larry Renault in Littleton isn't from this young generation. Some members of his congregation are strong Second Amendment supporters and say so during church-sponsored discussion on difficult political topics. Yet, after going through Columbine and seeing school shootings becoming more and more prevalent, Renault has landed on the other side.
Kind of ridiculous how easy it is to get a gun. in our country, in our state. I understand, you know, the Second Amendment, the rights, everything. I understand the argument, but I would like to see more gun control.
To others, the issue isn't guns, but who has them versus who doesn't. Law-abiding citizens shouldn't have their right to defend themselves stripped away because of the actions of dangerous, disturbed individuals. Andrew Pollack thinks it makes good people into easy targets.
Every kid 21 should take a concealed carry. You should get familiar with a firearm if you're comfortable with it, and get the proper training so you're not sitting trying to pray for someone to come and save you when you're in a situation.
A common solution from the pro-gun crowd is increased school security, including but not limited to arming teachers and school faculty. It's one of the many gun-friendly solutions proposed by people like Jordan Stein, Director of Communications for Gun Owners of America.
The simplest, easiest place to start is to, you know, let teachers who are already carrying or are willing to carry guns, let them carry.
This is an idea many teachers oppose. Columbine shooting survivor and Denver Public Schools head of counseling, Samantha Haviland, finds herself firmly in this camp.
The idea of us putting guns in the hands of teachers who are supposed to just teach math, like, speaking as a school professional, please do not give me a gun.
It's an idea she can't even fathom.
A kid that I loved came up to me wanting to kill his peers, I would do everything in my power to talk that child into giving me the gun. But God forbid that child kill me. Now that child has two guns and is going to cause more damage.
Marjorie Stoneman Douglas teacher Sarah Lerner agrees.
If that's the route this chooses to go, then I will stop teaching. I have never owned a gun, held a gun, looked at a gun. I don't want one. No. So that's a hard stop for me.
But not everyone touched by gun violence in schools thinks that way. Former Columbine student and current Colorado State Representative Patrick Neville believes that any teacher who wants to have a gun on them should be able to, and it's not fair to deny them that right based on the concerns of others.
I would never want to require any teacher to do it, but if they want to, I don't think we should prevent them from doing it.
Fellow Columbine survivor Craig Scott thinks any true solution isn't going to be solved by policy and legislation.
I'm for safer gun control and all of that, but that's not ultimately the answer. The problem lies in the hearts and minds of people in our culture today. That's also where the solutions lie.
John McDonald is the executive director of school safety in Jefferson County, the school district where the Columbine shooting took place. He says it's a matter of properly diagnosing the problem.
You explain to me why we're seeing this attack behavior, where it's coming from. And then we can have a conversation about what do you do to fix it. Until then, we're going to go in this big circle, and either every teacher should be armed or nobody should have guns, and neither of those are good.
Littleton pastor Danielle Reeves isn't too sure we already know the cause.
What are we not talking about? What are we forgetting to talk about? And what is happening that this is continuing and it's spiraling and it's becoming the norm? I don't know. I don't have great answers, but I have some questions that I would like to ask.
Former Columbine principal Frank DeAngelis says all of the above can contribute to ending gun violence in schools. But more than a gun issue, it's a school issue, and it needs to be solved within the school system.
Schools need support, and they do need counselors, and they need social workers and mental health workers. And when these school districts say we need to cut, that's the last place we want to cut. Because I can tell you, towards the end of my career, these students now are coming in with much more needs, many more needs than they did when I first started in 1979.
In the end, DeAngelis just has one question, and it's not for lawmakers, the religious leaders, or the teachers. It's for Generation Gun Down. It's for the kids who have dealt with this their whole lives.
We got to do something better, and you're the future. You guys are a future generation. What are you going to do?
It's impossible to say there's one solution or one right answer that's going to solve gun violence in schools, but it's undeniably the obligation of our society to fight for one, to debate, to march, to legislate, and compromise, and actually do work to make schools safe. If there's anything to learn from the past 20 years, it's that the status quo is unacceptable. This has been Generation Gunned Down, a special report on WUFT 89.1, 90.1 NPR News and Talk. I'm Sky LeBron. Additional producers on this documentary are Alexis Howard and Raymond Troncoso. There were several contributors to this piece. In Parkland, Grace King, Raymond Troncoso, Meredith Sheldon, and Alexis Howard. In Columbine, Claudia Perez Brito, Tessa Bentulin, Alexis Howard, Raymond Troncoso, and Sky LeBron. In Canada, Sophia Millar, Dolores Hinckley, and Grace King. In Washington, D.C., Maria Roberts, Henry Coburn, Matt Cerna, Daniela Mora, and Lauren Reynolds. In St. Louis, Camille Respis. In Tallahassee, Kat Gloria. And a special thanks to the people who made this all possible. Multimedia News Manager Ryan Vasquez, Director of Media Services Kathy Chambers, Digital Director Gary Green, Multimedia News Manager Harrison Hove, Real-Time News Editor Ethan Majok, Radio News Manager Forrest Smith, Equipment Room Manager Steve Kippert, and Innovation News Center Director Myra Lowe. For more WUFT in-depth and continuing coverage of the 20th anniversary of Columbine and the legacy of school shootings in America, go to GenerationGunnedDown.com for this and other news features.